You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to TPC. It is our second week of March Around the World 2023 edition of our March. Last week, we spoke with leaders in England, Australia, and Canada. And truly, there is no logic to our travels this year. You wouldn't go from England to Australia, back up to Canada, to go then to Croatia and Brazil. That is really just crisscrossing the globe, but that's the way we're doing it. And we've got so many more people and so many more nations to speak to as this month continues. And then April 1st, we'll kick off Confederate History Month. We are in a fantastic time of year for the TPC broadcasting calendar. But yes, last week we were in England, Australia, and Canada with Nick Griffin, Professor Drew Fraser, and Paul Fromm, respectively. Tonight, we're going to punch your ticket to Croatia when former diplomat Dr. Tomislav Sunic joins us. And then a little later tonight, after leaving the Balkans, we're going to take a quick trip down to Brazil for an update from our South American correspondent as TPC's aforementioned March Around the World rolls on. And as you know, as we like to remind you, during this month's special series, we're showcasing some of our people's greatest representatives from various European nations as we seek to discover how our kinsmen are faring throughout the Western world and beyond. So we are attempting to contact Tom right now. Tom Sunic has been a friend of mine for as long as the show has been on the air, and he is joining us now live from Zagreb. It is a little past 1 a.m. in the morning in the Balkans. Tom, it is great to have you back. How are you doing tonight?
Well, thank you very much for your call, and let me first extend my greetings to all of you folks, and of course to my friends, Kevin McDonald, and also to my folks from the American Freedom Party, and all to good people who are with, who actually want to find out something about the Balkans and something about Croatia. Go ahead, James.
We are ready to find out anything you want to inform us on. Let me first just remind our listening audience that what a regular you are on this program, an annual appearance at the very least. You've always been there with us, and we thank you for that. Tom Sunic holds a doctorate in political science. He gives lectures all around the world. He is well-traveled throughout Europe and beyond. As we mentioned, he has authored several books, including Homo Americanus, Child of the Postmodern Age, and Against Democracy and Equality, the European New Right. So let's just dive right down into it, Tom. Croatia, of course, as people know, is a full-fledged member of NATO, the EU, and the Schengen Zone. Is the Croatian government standing up for the unique interests of its own nation, or is it basically just participating in a mimicry of U.S., EU, and NATO directives?
It's a good point. Let me first start with some short rundown on the situation of Croatia vis-a-vis Russia and vis-a-vis Serbia. I guess it's a good point you have just made, James. Croatia is a full-fledged member of the European Union, and as of recently, it's also a member of the Schengen Agreement, which technically means that we can now travel, that one can travel from Zagreb, from where I live for the time being, all the way to Copenhagen without even noticing that one is crossing a foreign border. Just for your optics, if I can just make it a little bit more simple, Zagreb itself, it's about a 1 hour drive to Hungary, about an hour and a half drive to Austria, about an hour and a half to Italy, to Trieste, a little bit more than that, about 2 hours to Vienna, about 2.5 hours to Vienna, about 2 hours to Serbia. So as you can see, we are located right in a very geopolitically sensitive zone, and it's simply no wonder that Croatia, for that matter, the Balkans itself, has always been a sort of a very, very tricky place. Now, what I'm sure your listeners and your viewers would like to find out is something more about the position of Croatia towards Ukraine. Of course, Croatia being now a full-fledged member of NATO, and it holds joint exercises with NATO, with U.S. troops, pretty often, especially off the coast, the Adriatic coast. And as far as your question is concerned, as far as the Ukrainian question is concerned, and the so-called Russian invasion, I don't want to use this hyperbolic word, invasion, because it's more complicated than that. I must say, and I don't want to make my very judgment, that Croatia has been very supportive of Biden policy. I'm talking about official Croatia, not unofficial Croatia. It is very helpful as far as the Ukrainian cause is concerned. It has provided some hardware to Zelensky's government in Ukraine, and it has been almost, I should say, almost grossly and vulgarly critical of Putin and Russia and so on. I am not a friend and I'm not a fan of Putin, far from it, but the way the Croatian media, the mainstream media, presents and represents this whole story in eastern Ukraine, I guess it's almost like you're reading the Washington Post and the New York Times. So it's pretty much on the same page with Germany and with other non-European, European EU countries, in terms of this massive echoing of this massive support for Ukraine and the Ukrainian people. Let me, however, make a point, which I guess it's quite important. Historically, the Croatian people has been quite sympathetic to the Ukrainian cause, and we can talk about this a little bit more. There is quite a big, well, I don't know how many, and it's supposed to be a secret, but there is quite a number of Croatian volunteers, nationalists, white nationalists, you can call them, who fight on the Ukrainian side. Far from it that I'm happy with that, but for some reasons people draw parallels and analogies with the situation of Croatia during the breakup of Yugoslavia in 91-95, and I certainly am far from making any parallels with that past event. Now,
One second, my friend. I just want to tell our producer, I want to take advantage of every minute that we have with you, especially with you staying up so late tonight, your former role as a diplomat, which we'll get into in just a moment. Let's skip that first break and take the bottom of the hour break. So we'll give Dr. Sunich a couple of more minutes here. So continue on, Tom, please.
Yes. As far as Ukraine is concerned, you've got to keep in mind also that the next door, Serbia, which is literally the country where there is constant feud with it, now there's more on the psychological and cultural level, less on the political level. But Serbia is just about the only country in Europe which is, I don't want to say supportive of Russia, but it has not imposed sanctions on Russia. And there are direct flights from Belgrade to Zagreb, to Moscow on a daily basis. Serbia is in a big trouble in a way. On the other hand, it also has problems with its southern province of Kosovo, which was sliced out, literally was cut out of its territory 10 years, 15 years back. So I can now provide a worst case, but the very plausible scenario. Again, there's no war here. It's a very safe place, certainly much safer than Atlanta, or for that matter, East Coast and West Coast, certainly much safer than Marseille or even some parts of Berlin and elsewhere where I live. So I know what I'm talking about. But again, I can tell you that. But again, you know, when things start at some point, at some place, some location in Eastern Europe, or for that matter, in Russia for the time being, or in Ukraine, they're bound to spill over in neighboring countries. And again, I should not forget, it's the main point I want to make. There's a big divide, there's a big division now between white nationalists, or call them nationalists in Europe, along this line of who is for Ukraine and who is for Russia, who is for Putin and who is against Putin. And let me
tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm going to circle back to some of the other things you've been hitting on. Tell us a little bit about what you're mentioning now, though, with regards to white nationalism and how it's split.
I'm not running out of time because
it's. No. We skipped the break. You're with us for the whole hour. We skipped the breaks.
I'm very much concerned because this big division between and among white nationalists in Europe, I don't like even using this word white nationalists, people of European ancestry, people of the same gene pool like me and you, they're again getting divided and there's a big split between them. Of course, keep in mind there are quite a few of Poles, there are quite a few of Scandinavians fighting on the Ukrainian side. Now, keep in mind, again, regardless of I'm totally opposed to Zelensky's government, the way how they handled it, and I think that even the State Department is not handling this crisis in the Ukrainian very well. I'm definitely supportive of President Orban, Prime Minister Orban in Hungary, and I think that first and foremost, this war should come to a stop, and there should be negotiations between both sides. But again, you can see that, for instance, quite a few of Baltic peoples and nationalists, like, are historically speaking, have been very, very critical of Russia and its ambitions, regardless of communism. So communism or Putin notwithstanding, this is the same case with Poland. I don't know how many Polish volunteers, white volunteers, you can put it that way, were killed, were murdered, or in fact were perished during this war, but there are certainly quite a few of them. And I also suspect quite a few of Croat nationalists. Some of them may know me, some of them I've heard of, and so on, but it's a tragic conflict, and I'm very, very sorry about this. And
all right.
Again, we know very well who is the main mover and shaker of this conflict. If somebody is to be blamed, again, keep in mind that the war did not start in 2022. It started in much earlier, even earlier than the Maidan event in 2014. It started with the Obama government. It started actually with Clinton government, when, of course, there were quite a few of American officials, high officials, who were pontificating in Kiev and who had some very, very gross and hyperbolic anti-Russian statements. Now, back to Croatia again. I just want to make sure we don't run out of time and we cover every detail, every nook and cranny. Again,
sure.
Serbia really stands out. I don't want to make my own value judgment whether this is for good or for bad, but they really have an semi-independent foreign policy in terms of its attitude, in terms of its stance towards Russia. And the only problem is, and this is this worst-case scenario, and we want to end up with this first segment, like the United States of America engages Russia or enlarges this conflict to further dimensions, we can put it that way, I'm not ruling out that this could spill over into the Balkans and that the Croats may be used as proxies or as pawns rather against the Serbs, because there is still this simmering conflict, you know, going back to the early 90s between Serbs and Croats, considering the breakup of Yugoslavia. So again, you might end up, again, this is just a weird scenario, but it's quite plausible. We may end up again with a civil war in Europe, where you might have Poles, Finns, Lithuanians, Estonians, Croats, of course, to some extent also Czechs and Slovaks, fighting on the American side against the Russians and their allies in Western Europe, some of their volunteers, whatever, from France or Greece and elsewhere. And I guess, again, we have this tendency of saying that history repeats itself. Yes, we see that here, and I certainly wouldn't like to see that happen again.
Let's recap what we've learned so far from you, Dr. Sunich, and your experience on the ground here as a professor, as a former diplomat, is, of course, very profound. And you've got insights here that you're sharing that go beyond just opinion. This is something you've done professionally. So, just to restate some of the things that we've covered so far, Croatia basically echoes the voice of NATO, which is the voice of Washington. They are playing
right.
the Croatian government, the Croatian media, not necessarily all of the Croatian people. Obviously, you are a native Croat and are there in Zagreb and are a fantastic representative of our race and of our cause. But the official head table there, playing a submissive role in the anti-Russian campaign. They have full support, as you mentioned a moment ago. I believe you put it, they basically echo the Washington Post, the neocon deep state. I want to talk a little bit more. A question already came in about this from a listener. Your opinion on this crisis in your neighboring Serbia with its Albanian neighbor, the U.S.-sponsored Kosovo. There's a large U.S. military base in Kosovo, as people may or may not know.
And, but,
this is the question.
Me. You don't hear about this quite often, but yes, this is the second largest U.S. military base in eastern Kosovo, right on the threshold of Serbia. Now, keep in mind again that the Kosovo is, I hate using hyperbolic language, but this is basically an artificial statelet, you know, which was carved out 50 years back from the territory of Serbia. This is the ancestral territory of Serbia. Culture goes back to the 13th century, and of course, they're very proud of it. And just recently, there was a military buildup, and a Serbian military buildup, which was hopefully successfully solved by EU military peacekeeping troops, I'll put it under quotation marks, KFEAR. Now, of course, the American troops, as far as this big camp is concerned, Bondsteel, they're just out.
And this camp is visible from outer space. It's an American military base so big and expansive, it's visible from space.
Huge, but you never ever hear about them. I don't know what their activities are. I'm pretty much sure they're not passing out chocolates or candy bars or Hershey bars or whatever. It's actually the whole system, I suspect, you know. I just don't want to take in some wild guesses, but I suspect this whole area in control by the American troops serves as a surveillance center, because keep in mind, Greece is next door, it's not very far, Macedonia is not very far, and of course it probably takes, I don't know, 10 minutes, you know, flight to Tel Aviv, you know, from over there. Now, I can give you an idea of Zagreb is up north. We are closer to Vienna than to Belgrade, and I guess this Bondsteel camp, it's about 600 miles from Zagreb. Now, of course,
do you think that this camp? I'm going to mention some of the geography of the Balkans in the next segment after the bottom of the hour break, because I always say this, I'm fascinated by maps. If you put a map in front of me, I'd just be enthralled and riveted for hours.
Yes,
I love studying maps.
Sorry, if you're not doing a video, because if I had a video, I would show it on a map. It would be much, the optics is needed for this type of a discussion, James. But go ahead.
Well, you do need a little PowerPoint, but we'll do our best to paint a verbal picture. But with this Camp Bondsteel, this American military installation, do you think that this could have some U.S.-Russian replications in the Balkans for having this
absolutely
position there?
Like it had, you know, during the bombing of Belgrade. You understand the bombing of Belgrade in 99, which was against the international law, if you can put it that way, you know. Of course, many Croats were quite excited about this, but many Croats were also not excited against this. So again, the American policy, especially, I'm talking about, listen, neocon policy, has been very detrimental, first to Croatia and now to Serbia. And again, you'd be surprised how many people, even many Croat Americans. Now, keep in mind, this is digression. We have a large diaspora. There are 4 million Croats, you know, living abroad. And in fact, there are about a couple of million Americans of Croatian descent, including myself, you know. So basically, keep in mind that lots of Croats are very conservative. They all voted Trump in 2016. And of course, I will quite distinctly remember during the bombing of Belgrade in 1999, there were quite a few of Croat nationalists who were opposed to that, because they asked themselves the question, if push comes to shove, we'll be next on target. So by and large, quite a few of Croatian nationalists here are opposed to this neocon policy conducted by Joe Biden and his group of people. Just look at their pedigree and everything will be quite clear to you. So,
all right.
Yes.
A lot going on, it sounds like. I mean, my goodness, my friend, you have filled a segment, and you filled two segments without a break, and we have covered a ton of ground. I mean, really giving people a picture of what's currently taking place in Croatia, which sits at in the very heart of the Balkans.
Yes, well, let me just add, you know, insult to injury, the problem is further complicated beside this simmering tension, historical and cultural, linguistic tension between Serbs and Croats. Right in between, you have this literally artificial state of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And I'm now using an ad hoc adjective, artificial. This is literally a state that was constructed that is run by U.S. and EU proconsuls, and it consists of Bosnian Muslim majority, 2 million people, and then the Serbian Orthodox, who actually have a number of 1.5 million, and then the small, tiny Croatian Catholic minority, about a couple hundred thousand people adjacent to Croatia. So this is literally an artificial state because it runs basically on the principles, on ukas, as you can say, on decrees of the European Union and State Department. Now, again, if push comes to shove, I'm not ruling out, and this is just a wild scenario, that the Russians who are also there, of course they have their quote-unquote humanitarian agencies, lobbies, charismatic, places.
Hold on right there. Tom, we got to take a hard break. Ladies and gentlemen, he's this much of a live wire at 1:30 a.m. Zagreb time. Can you imagine what he's like during the middle of the day? That's how great Tom Sunic is. We'll be back with him right after this.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Two high-profile GOP hopefuls are visiting the early caucus state of Iowa. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, they're both making the rounds in the Hawkeye state. Haley has already launched her 2024 bid for the White House. DeSantis is widely expected to run. The Florida governor rallied against what he called woke ideology and attacked the Biden administration. The U.S. is planning to lift COVID testing requirements to travelers from China.
The plan was put in place this year, requiring a negative COVID test for travelers ages 2 and older before leaving on flights from China. It was placed following an uptick in COVID cases in China after the country ended its COVID zero policy. I'm Ryan Daniels.
At least two people are dead as flooding intensifies in California.
Officials in Santa Cruz County say a town of 10,000 people have been isolated by flooded roads. There are power blackouts as well. At a news conference Friday, California's Director of Emergency Services confirmed that flooding has caused two deaths. National Weather Service meteorologist Bill Rash says storms and rain are not going away.
At the Monday-Tuesday storm, it's looking like a pretty good chance of a couple inches, but what's pretty sure is that even, you know, with another inch or two, we're going to have additional flooding impact.
President Biden has approved a state of emergency for California, clearing the way for federal assistance. I'm Karen Sloan.
The first ever 3D printed rocket is scrubbing another launch. The launch earlier today, relatively Space's Terran 1 rocket, was scrubbed in the last hour of the launch window following a launch commit criteria violation less than a minute before liftoff. A launch Wednesday of the rocket was scrubbed at T-minus 22 seconds. This is USA News.
Attention, small business owners. This could be the most important 10-minute call you will ever make. You could recover up to $26,000 per employee today. And all you have to do is make one short 10-minute call to take your business up a notch or bounce back from these difficult couple of years. Omega Accounting Solutions can help you recover any payroll tax overpayments you made during the pandemic. You may even be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee. All it takes is a quick, easy, free 10-minute ERC consultation to determine if you qualify. Omega is the small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. They know their stuff so well that CPAs and payroll companies even turn to Omega for ERC tax guidance. Call 800-300-9ERC. That's 800-300-9ERC. 1-800-300-9ERC. Or visit OmegaTaxCredit.com. China has...
Any night with Dr. Tomislav Sunic is going to be a good night of radio. I can tell you that because we've been hosting him for nearly two decades. And I can remember even going around in the rural South picking strawberries and fruit at an orchard with Tom Sunic. And then we traveled together from Memphis down to a conference at which we both spoke in Florence, Alabama. That was a long time ago, but he has been a good friend and a wonderful champion for our people for his entire life. And again, Dr. Tom Sunic has, in addition to his lectures around the world, his books, which you can still find on Amazon, and I would encourage you to check them out. He has served in various diplomatic positions with the Croatian government in places like London, Copenhagen, and Brussels. He currently resides in Zagreb, where he joins us from tonight. He's a freelance writer, still writing, still out there doing the good work. So, in the first half of this interview with Dr. Sunic and his appearance this year on our March Around the World, he was giving us some deep dives into some very complicated issues. In this half, the second half of our time with Dr. Sunic tonight, he is going to be keeping his answers punchy and concise as we work through as many questions as we can that have already come in from the audience. So, Tom, I turn it back over to you. And here is the first question for you. And this is a follow-up from something we were talking about earlier. Can you discuss briefly the possibility of war between NATO and Serbia?
Yes, indeed. As I said just a while ago, there was a war between NATO and Serbia in 1991 when the NATO aircraft bombed heavily Belgrade. And again, this was not quite in compliance with international law. I don't know who gave the permission to those troops. I know for sure that I was still serving as a diplomat in Tudjman's government. He was opposed himself to this campaign because most of those planes flew from Aviano, which is up north in northern Italy. It's about 10-minute drive, about 10-minute flight from the F-16 over there. And, of course, they flew over Croatia, and apparently, I don't know all the details, so I just don't want to get involved in conspiracy theories. Some of that material, bad material, I don't know what's the technical word for it, was dropped later on Croatian islands, and apparently it was quite toxic and so on. So basically, yes, Serbia and NATO, they don't have perfect ties. Of course, they have full-fledged diplomatic ties, but as I said, the worst-case scenario is that Serbia may be used, in fact, as a target again, and Croatia may be used as a pawn, and in this putative conflict that may again occur in the Balkans in the years to come. Again,
what year was that? What year was that conflict?
1999. I'm sorry, I probably have said 1999. Right on the Christmas, a little bit earlier than that. Honestly, I'll tell you, yes, in summer 1999 was a big bombing campaign by NATO.
That was a Clinton war.
Yes, it was Clinton's war, precisely. I'm sort of losing track of time.
they all blurred. Believe me, they all blurred.
By the way, he was a figure. I know for sure, I swear, if I was in Belgium then, I was stationed in Belgium. The Chinese in the embassy was heavily hit. There was a big diplomatic problem back then between the Chinese government and, of course, the U.S. government. Of course,
yeah, I've got a ton of questions. I want to touch on your time as a diplomat. I fear we're going to run out of time. Let's quickly work through these. Can you discuss the hypocrisy of NATO denouncing the Donbas secession while supporting Kosovo secession?
Well, I guess it's so strange, and I mean this whole neocon scenario in Washington, not just in Washington, but also on the East Coast, is hard to grasp. And it is hard to grasp and hard to explain to somebody, let alone for many Croats, let alone for many native Europeans who have no idea what's going on, who don't really understand who runs the show in Washington, D.C. And just look at the pedigree, look at the genealogy of some of his neocon advisors. You will also understand that most of them come from Ukraine, but their grandparents, you know, from parental side, maternal side, from Ukraine and Eastern Russia. And I guess this probably explains to some extent why Blinken, for that matter, Victoria Nuland, or for that matter, some other gentlemen sitting in the State Department, have some beefs, if I can put it somewhat colloquially, against the Ukrainians and against the Russians. All things being said, don't forget the Ukrainians. I have a great sympathy for them because they have terrible losses. I don't know how many college students in America realized that in 1933, Ukraine suffered horrendous Holocaust. It was 6 million.
Oh, yes. Yes.
The same year, you know, the State Department, I think it was Roosevelt established diplomatic ties with the Soviet Union. Okay, so I mean, put things in perspective. We cannot just take out and decontextualize our talks. The same year, 1933, the United States of America established diplomatic ties with the Soviet, with the Stalin Soviet Union, while at the same time knowing perfectly well what was going on in Ukraine, that people were starved to death. I don't want to mention the names, but you can guess by that. But just looking at the etymology of the names of those big architects of this Holocaust, of this actual, this big starvation, and you, they barely hear about this in Washington Post, and on CNN, and elsewhere.
Very little. You don't hear about it ever. Not ever.
you don't read. I'm sorry if I need recamping that. You know, probably the privilege of living in communism was, as I hate to repeat myself, we knew the bastards. We knew how gross they were. We knew how their lingo. We knew the Soviet lingo very well. But in America, what they have now with this quote-unquote free press of fake news, or call it mainstream media. When I read for instance, the New York Times or Washington Post or CNN, it really makes me vomit. It makes me puke. Even the syntax, even if you forget it, you know, I'm a linguist myself, so I have a strong background in foreign languages. So it's just amazing what type of a hyperbole the CNN uses. Again, it doesn't mean that I've sided up with Putin and his clan. Far from it. But I just would like to see the American press, the main outlets, be a little bit more objective and to put things a little bit in a historical context.
Thank you so much for your time.
See, now you really pulled me. I strayed away now a little bit when I started ranting.
No. It was. Hey, listen. Every word carried freight, as they say. But no, you're exactly right. There's no free press in America. Try to have a diversity of opinion in American media, like we have done for the last 20 years, and see how they treat you. There is no diversity of opinion in the American press. They're all carrying water for the regime, for the narrative, and of course they're all bought and controlled. It is the lying press. You mentioned the decade of the 1930s. A very quick question, and I want to get to some personal issues with you, but answer, you can answer this as quickly as you can. Do you think that Putin or Russia is protecting Russian speakers the same way that Germany was attempting to protect ethnic German speakers in 1939 with what's going on over there right now?
Of course, we always have to draw some parallels. Like, what is history? Well, studying history means drawing parallels always. There are certain parallels, of course, that we can say, you know, if you look from the German perspective, you know, the Poles were troublemakers because even the Hitler's government, the foreign ministry of Ribbentrop, was willing, you know, back even until 1939 to cut some deals about Danzig, you know, which was heavily popular. 90% Germans lived there in Danzig, you know. Baltic Germans also. So, of course, they had to cut, they wanted to cut some deal with the Polish government, which was heavily anti-communist. There's no question about that. But for a variety of reasons, the Poles didn't want to do that. Of course, the Poles were instigated by the Brits and to some extent also by the Roosevelt government to incite the Germans into war and so on. So, again, the Europeans also, I must say, with all due respect, you know, for our cause and for our gene pool, but the Europeans are quite stupid often, and they're easily manipulated. And I must make here a very solid point, James, please do allow me that. Just as much as we can now gloat about our, whatever you want to call it, white power, this and that, but those tribal issues are extremely strong, Serbs versus Croats, Hungarians versus Romanians, Slovaks versus Czechs, and then now the Baltics are against the Russians. You know, Estonia has 25% of small country, 1 million people, the 25% of Russian-speaking people there. Ukraine is not a homogenous country. Eastern Ukraine is heavily Russophone, inhabited by Russians. 3.5 million Russians left Ukraine, refugees from Russia, from Ukraine. So it's very, very complicated terrain. What I'm saying over and over again, our prime cause, our prime goal should be preserving our gene pool and not fighting inter-European wars.
No more brothers' wars. Absolutely. No more brothers' wars.
Let us not be manipulated by neocons who are basically, I will just put it very simply, I have no time now to go into linguistics and semantic distortions, but basically what the Soviets, what the communists, the Bolsheviks did not succeed in the 30s and 20s with their terror. Now you have neocons who are far more sophisticated, far more refined. They're doing the same thing now even to the American people in the United States of America. I'm not going to mention their names, but if you study their genealogy, you will figure out very well where they come from and what their goals are. So basically, yes, to some extent it's failed. The utopia of the Soviet Union is now again with its affirmative action, ethnic sensitivity, training, you name it, all this LGBT and all these things is now recapping itself in a different format, in a different paleo-communistic format now in the United States of America. And of course, you know, I'm very much concerned of it because I'm a U.S. citizen and I love the South. You know, I'd like, you never know. I'm not even ruling out that I might even settle down back in where you live, in Missouri or somewhere in the South. I love the South. So again,
I'm in Tennessee where you have visited me, yes, but you know, Missouri's close enough. You know, hey, you know, it's like all those Baltics, Baltic and Balkan and all the European nations really are about the size of the American states. I think people, you know, perhaps might not know that you can drive through any number of European nations with just within a few hours because they're not that big. They're all separate nations, as we have these separate states, but it's really comparable to that. Now, Tom, let me ask you a couple
keep
of
in mind, Owen, the biggest problem, of course, is our tribal and our what we call historical memories. We got to stop with that gloating of white power. I mean, this is nonsense. This is stupidity. Look, one way or another, Europeans have been plagued themselves by those constant tribal wars. We can lambast the Arabs, we can talk negatively about Jews and so on, but all things considered, even if Europe is homogeneous perfectly, even if it resuscitates itself, the gene pool and so on, I'm not ruling out there will be again tribal wars, you know, it's constantly plaguing us, you know. I'm sorry about what happened between Serbs and Croats. Tomorrow this may happen again between Poles and Russians.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely. Well, it will if they can manipulate it.
They get a little bit carried away with this.
You know? Well, you're onto something. I mean, the two world wars were entirely manipulated. And it was virtually 100% white blood spilt on all sides of the two world wars. I mean, and that certainly had a disastrous. Yeah. We cannot survive another thing like that. Now, let me ask you. We only have about 10 minutes remaining with you because I know we're going to lose you before the end of this hour. We really got to make haste now. I want to invite you, ladies and gentlemen, to read any of Tom Sunich's works. A lot of them can still be found at Amazon. You can find him at Twitter at the top of my Twitter handle and at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. You can link over to his Twitter handle, follow him, read anything he puts out. It's always good. Okay, I've got to ask you these. I'm looking at the map, well, as quickly as possible. I'm looking at the map. As I said, I'm fascinated by maps. I'm looking at the map of the Balkans. And remember, Balkanized, Balkanization, there's something there. These brothers' wars that this part of the world has faced, even above and beyond the world wars. But I'm looking at Croatia, which is a very interesting thing. I mean, you've got a very interesting coastline that basically landlocks Bosnia and Herzegovina, which you mentioned as an artificial country. You're just south of Austria, very close to Austria. You border Hungary, a little bit to the southeast, not very far away at all, Macedonia and Greece. So it's a very interesting part of the European world. You're just a little boat ride across from Italy, even. Which of the Balkan states are most encouraging to you with regards to white consciousness, or are there any?
Good point. You know, first and foremost, I got to tell you that Croatia is just about the only white enclave, and so is Serbia to a large extent, but Croatia more so. And that's the paradox of Eastern Europe, that we are nowadays more European under quotation marks than Western Europe. You know, quite frankly, I don't feel like traveling anymore to England, for that matter, to London, because I feel like not just like a stranger, but like a foreigner, you know, even at the passport control, at the border control, when you show your US or EU passport, you have people. The border control who are not quite European, if you see what I mean. So yes, definitely, this is something we also got to consider quite seriously. And I would encourage your friends, our foreign friends from the United States of America, to possibly even consider relocating to Croatia and to Eastern Europe, because it's still a very safe. All things considered, well, let's forget for a while, you know, the Russian conflict and the Ukrainian conflict. But Croatia is very safe, and Croatia is very, of course, I don't want to say racially conscious. I call them rather implicit whites. You know, this is the term that I borrow often from Kevin.
That's okay. That's better than self-hating whites, which we've got plenty of in the United States.
No. We don't have that. That's even the Catholic Church in Croatia, which is very strong, you know, and it's quite racially aware. Of course, they don't formulate that in an anthropological lingo. But folks, by and large, are much more aware of this monogamous marriages and racial consciousness than Western European. You know, of course, you know, keep in mind that in France and in Germany, the term race, rasse, was erased from the constitution and no longer exists. And even if you talk to local cops here, even folks on the road, they feel this. I don't want to say hatred, but certain resentment towards people coming from non-European countries. This is something we got to address real briefly in 1 minute, James. Now, of course, Croatia, having now become the full-fledged member of the European Union and Schengen Agreement, has literally become a launching pad for waves and waves of non-European migrants, mostly migrants coming from Eastern Asia, actually they're not Turks, but from Afghanistan. And I can see when I go downtown shopping, I see more and more non-Europeans now moving and moving around in downtown Zagreb. Of course, most of them don't want to stay in Zagreb or in Croatia. They want to move forward, you know, to Austria. They go to Germany, and you know why? For obvious reasons. Germany is a self-hating nation. It stigmatizes a neo-Nazi country, and totally schizoid nation, I can tell you, as far as the Germans are concerned, as far as the German government is concerned. So, indeed, I mean, I'm appealing to your friends, and if some of them are fluent in German, and I write also in German and French, so if you have some interesting people, let them know that they can write me an email or something.
Well, Germany, I'll tell you, maybe some people will be writing you an email, because I got this message
by
in now.
Means, I'd be happy to be of help. Now, one thing, now, in a sense, Eastern Europe, let's say Serbia, Russia, or even Croatia, is far better off. We are better off in terms of free speech. We can still say certain things.
Wow.
We can still crack jokes, not bad jokes, even about migrations and so on. Quite explicitly, you don't want to even think about this in Germany, where they have the strong, what they call Verfassungsschutz, where they have actually this thought police, it's extremely strong and very, you know, got to be extremely careful about what you say. In Eastern Europe, as I said, for the time being, things are changing for the worse in Croatia, because now we are member of the European Union, so we are also subject to this Gleichschaltung, to this level of type of a, what do you call it, to this new administrative Soviet speak coming from Brussels and Strasbourg. I got to single out the name of our president. Of course, this is not a presidential system like in President Milanovic, whom I used to know once when I was a diplomat back in Brussels 20 years ago. He stands out. He is quite opposed to this proxy war, and he received some kudos. Of course, the Russian propaganda uses his words as a words of encouragement, excuse me. But he's actually opposed to the training of Ukrainian troops in Croatia. So he's in dispute with the Prime Minister Plenković.
Well, I got a message here now that said a friend of a friend is a retired army guy who took a bride from Croatia. He said compared to America, it's a white paradise there, and I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, you may be on the decline from what you knew Croatia to be, but I bet compared to America, it would be hard to be worse. So that's encouraging. And of course, there's encouraging things going on in places like Hungary with Viktor Orban. I mean, the thing Viktor Orban says, we couldn't hardly improve on. And so that's encouraging. My goodness, Tom, we have literally about 2 or 3 minutes left with you, and I know we're going to lose you. But this has been a fantastic appearance. I want to thank you again.
I'm sorry.
I would love to come over there, and I would love to see you again over here, as we have done many times before at different conferences and events.
You know, history is always open, but as a friend of yours very well mentioned, please, guys, do come over there. I mean, I hate to say I'm not a macho, I'm not a womanizer. There are beautiful women here, tall, you know, good-looking, you know, very Catholic, very conservative, certainly much more conservative than many, many American women in the States, you know, white women. So, you know, the only thing is Croatia has a catastrophic birth rate growth. And now on the natality, our kids, we have basically...
Yeah, we need a couple of white Genghis Khans. We need a couple of white Genghis Khans over to these European nations.
My white American friends come over here and settle down here. They can, you know, you can travel with the American passport. You don't even need a visa or something, you know. Buy yourself a property, get yourself established here. And I would like you to hitch up with those literally thousands of girls who just go to the church every Sunday and see good-looking
that's
women.
That's where they're at. I've been telling people. I've been telling these guys that's where you got to go. You got to go to church. That's where they're at. The traditional, good-looking.
I don't want to be getting accused of sexual harassment or something. Don't get me wrong. I got to watch my But please, folks, I'm seriously telling you that, you know, they're good people here. They're very, of course, you know, got to be careful. They're Catholic, conservative. Of course, we have those lobbies. We have the LGBTs. We have Soros people financing I don't want to call them freaks. Since, again, unfortunately, we've inherited from communism certain things, but we are now inheriting this capitalism, certain amount of decadence coming from Hollywood, you know. And so on and so forth. So yes, indeed, in terms of administrative problems, you won't have difficulties. It used to be a little bit difficult, of course, shortly after the war, but now things, you know, you got to give a certain credit to this government. Things are much more simple. And of course, Croats are in favor of Americans, white Americans, of course, and Germans. These are you're safe here for the time being, as I said. I don't know what's going to happen.
That's right. Hey, listen, this is it. You got to buy yourself and your line, your lineage, a generation or two. What else can you do? It's okay. Listen, isn't the same place that my grandparents lived at. You have to do what's best for your family. If you can afford to go to a place like that and set up shop and raise a family and find a bride, you got to do it.
If things, you know, if push comes to shove, it's the other way around. I don't mind coming over and helping you guys.
I tell you what, if we had a couple of thousand Tom Sunich's in America, it would definitely put a dent in the armor. I respect you so much, Tom. I appreciate our friendship. You know, you became I was going to say a dictator, a diplomat. In 1993, I was in seventh grade. If you'd have told my seventh grade self that when I was 42, I'd be interviewing a Croatian diplomat, I would be like, what? But no, I've known you since I was in my early 20s, and I'm a better man for it.
This is my, you know, US, especially friends in the South. I'm not ruling out, you know, as I keep saying it, I don't want to sound catastrophic. History is always open. Look at the Balkanized America. Look at what Joe Biden is doing, you know, with the border. There's no more border now. Biden seems to be obsessed with the integrity and unity of Ukraine. Yet at the same time, the United States of America, the Southern... As we say, Swiss cheese, you know, people are strolling in, coming in, you know, and I just, look, if push comes to shove, you know, I like always quoting and paraphrasing Pat Buchanan. We knew him both, you know.
Oh, yeah,
this
sure
term Balkanization of the United States does not just imply, does not only apply to the Balkans, you know, geographically speaking, to my area here, it also applies to the United States of America. America is full is balkanized, and I do not know what's going to happen. And again, if I have to choose the sides, you know very well whose sides I'm going to choose.
I'll tell you what, I'm on your side and you're on mine.
I owe you and I owe our brothers and sisters very, very much. Of course, I'm not probably, you know, with some technical things we're not going to talk about, but I'm good as a speaker. So I certainly want to use my skills, you know.
Tom, it has been an entirely riveting and enthralling hour with you. I say right now, best appearance ever Tom Sinnott just made. We just lost it because we ran out of money. Second hour coming up next.